Thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity to share. I've only got 10 minutes to squeeze in 55 years of very exciting ministry, but I thought I would begin with the story of how I joined the church here. I became a believer when I was 13 or 14 through the Crusader class Bible study group, but I didn't go to a church for a couple of years. And then about 55 years ago, David Boone, the pastor at Crofton Baptist, he was doing door-to-door visitation in the area, and I used to live I grew up in that house on the corner at the very top of Crofton Road, Crofton Lane on the right. They're just turning it into 7 apartments now. And my father, who was somewhat antagonistic to the church, was busy throwing Reverend Boone out of the house and setting the dogs on him. And I managed to catch up with him in the street. And I said, look, I'm a Christian. I'm interested in finding a church. And I promised him I would come the first Sunday after I finished my exams. It was about this time of year. First Sunday came, I was just getting ready to go to church, and a friend of mine came and said, I've just bought a new grass track racing motorbike. Come with me, we're going to test it on a nearby circuit. So I said, okay, I'll go next Sunday. My turn to drive this machine around the track was great. You know, first couple of laps was terrific. The third lap, the bike skidded off the road into a ditch, threw me into the long grass. And it took about 10 minutes before my friends could come across to find out how the bike was. Meanwhile, I couldn't move. I was staring up at the sky, and I was reflecting on the fact I should have been at Crofton. And I promised God there and then, if I could walk the next week, I would be in church. And I was, on a pair of crutches. And that's really been the story of my life, in a way, that God has always used somewhat violent circumstances to move me on to the next chapter. And, well, that's another whole long story, but we'll touch on a couple of those. I was an engineer working on bridge construction and increasingly spending more summers and time with Operation Mobilization. I got a passion for Christian literature. I was involved in different publishing projects in this country for students. And eventually I decided it was important to give 1 year of my life before I got too settled to ministry. And I was going to spend a year with OM. So just 2 weeks after we got married in this church in 1972, we left initially to work in Eastern Europe, taking couriering Bibles in and out of countries like the then Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, Romania. And then went on to Beirut to help with the publishing project. And it was there that we kind of got frustrated at the limited people you could reach with the book, because people didn't read, people couldn't read, and we came up with the idea of a newsstand magazine. But they were the years that Rita talked about, the year of the Civil War, and increasingly it became more and more difficult. We lost the windows, the whole front of the office got blown in twice. It became increasingly dangerous to move around. We couldn't get any mail, or communications all broke down. So we thought, let's go to Egypt for a few weeks till the war finishes. Well, of course, the war didn't finish for 15 years, and we didn't ever go back to Lebanon. But it was a way God moved us again by force into a new situation. And in Egypt, God led us into contact with some amazing writers, artists, creative people that could put together a newsstand magazine to reach hundreds of thousands of young people across the Arab world. That was exciting, but it wasn't keeping up with the kind of growth that we were seeing in the population of the Arab world in those days. It was growing by 1 million people a month from Morocco right through to the Arabian Peninsula. And I remember walking home from work one day. It was the end of a long day, and they started to build a new apartment tower next to the apartment in which I lived. And as I was just about getting home, I was looking across the road at what they were doing, and I noticed a night watchman there. He had a wife and 3 kids, so we were playing in the piles of sand and generally living, actually, literally on the street. But they were there to protect the building supplies night and day. They had nothing except a few cooking utensils, but what they did have was a television set. A little black and white set, like Rita mentioned, wired across the building site to a sympathetic neighbour's PowerPoint. And I remember looking at this because here was a family that would never read a Christian book or could not read anything, actually. And it was typical of the environment in which we were living, and yet I was involved in Christian publishing. And then newspaper articles began appearing in Egypt, talking about how the corruption of television, the prevalence, it was kind of ubiquitous. People everywhere were watching television, and the farmers that used to go to their fields at 5 or 6 in the morning in Upper Egypt were now bleary-eyed and could hardly get out of bed at 6 o'clock because they'd been staying up late watching soap operas on television and how it was ruining the country. But the truth was that when you had a TV, it was an endless source of free information and free entertainment. It was a distraction from the grinding poverty in which you lived. And so we put together a team to try and create some television programming that we could possibly get onto Egyptian television and other television stations that had Christian values but was not overtly evangelistic to the point where no television station would accept it. But as we got to the end of the 80s and we began to develop some experience in television production, the obvious opportunity to broadcast from satellite directly into homes across the region without censorship became, to me, more obvious, to other people, somewhat less obvious, and there was a lot of skepticism that we had to deal with. But we spent a lot of time talking with church leaders, trying to realize their fears. Obviously, television that is coming from the West, that is sponsored, you know, tele-evangelist, was not appropriate culturally or even politically in that part of the world. People wanted television that would meet the needs and interests of the region, that would be culturally relevant. And so we set about designing a television policy, but it was at that time I was deported from Egypt. And again, it was one of those shocking experiences that God had brought into my life, but for a purpose. In Egypt, I had 100 staff, 3 offices. It was manic. There was a crisis every day somewhere, and you didn't get to focus. And suddenly I'm ripped out of this, went to Cyprus where we already did our printing, had a legal registration, all our banking and mail went there, and suddenly I had like 8 to 10 hours a day where I hardly saw anybody, hardly talked to anybody, and it was amazing. I could just really focus on this. And again, I could, looking back, see how God had used that as another way of repositioning me for the next phase of my ministry. And as Rita mentioned, we started with just 2 hours a week of broadcasting, and it was a challenge. We didn't have a camera for the first 3 years of the operation. We actually rented time in different studios. The second week we were supposed to have a second program, of course, but you know, it wasn't quite ready, so we repeated the first week. And eventually we really expanded to 2.5 hours a week, and then to 5 hours a week by repeating the 2.5 hours. And it was 5 years before we actually got to a daily service in Arabic, because really we didn't have funds, we didn't have people who knew what they were doing, we didn't have facilities. But God used those people that were involved in the early days, including Rita and others, who grew in their understanding of television and what needed to be said in this context and so on. Well, eventually we launched a children's channel, 24 hours a day, covering the 6 time zones that were so difficult to schedule for. And then we had a Persian service that launched, had its challenges, broadcasting into Iran, Afghanistan, and then a Turkish service that God has greatly blessed in a country that's extremely difficult. But we have a wonderful team of Christian Turks operating out of the basement of a supermarket in Istanbul, running a 24-hour channel. And I have to give thanks to God. Really, I feel like I've been a spectator all these years. I've sort of sat back and watched what God was doing. I can't feel that I did anything except become a sort of catalyst and observer. And it's been thrilling to see this and to see the way in which God brought the people and the resources together. 2 months ago, I did step down as the CEO, and people said, well, what are you going to do now? Well, yes, I'm not quite sure, but it seems to me I haven't even had time to clear my desk yet, and I've been as busy as I ever have been, and I haven't even started on some of the projects that I need to, including the writing of a book. More on that later. My time is up, but I just wanted to pave the way for our new CEO, Rita Almanaya, to come and share more about the vision and the opportunities of the future. Thank you, Rita. Yes. Okay.
That's a remarkable. It's such a few minutes to do that. I'm very impressed. If you haven't met Terry before, find him over coffee and come and ask him some questions. We're going to sing a song before Rita comes to speak to us. I chose this song not knowing that this